Just a reminder, today's conference is being recorded.
Hi, and welcome. This is Resolve's teleseminar on how to start a peer-led support group. If you are someone who is interested in learning how to volunteer for Resolve and to host one of our peer-led support groups anywhere in the United States, we welcome you to this teleseminar. Over the next hour or so, you will be hearing about what a Resolve peer-led support group is, how to start one, what it feels like to host a peer-led support group, and hopefully we'll be providing you with enough information for you to decide whether this is the right volunteer opportunity for you at this time. In addition to that, you will get to hear from a current peer-led support group host on her personal experience with starting and hosting a peer-led support group. So thank you so much for joining us. My name is Barbara Kulora. I am the Executive Director of Resolve, the National Infertility Association, and I will be leading today's teleseminar. And I'm calling you from Resolve's headquarters. We're located in McLean, Virginia, outside Washington, D.C., and I'm really excited to have you listen to this teleseminar today. One of the really founding core projects and outreach programs of Resolve are the support groups. In fact, when Resolve was founded in 1974, we were founded by a nurse in Massachusetts who was going through infertility, and she started a support group in her kitchen, around her kitchen table, and she invited people that she had met and knew that were going through infertility, and that is how we started. So it's really one of the founding principles of our organization in providing support. So it's very important to me and to our organization that we offer these peer-led support groups. So by joining on this call today, you are helping to not only fulfill our mission, but to help grow our support group network around the country. So thank you again. I hope you decide to listen to the whole call, because at the very end of the call, I'm going to give you specific instructions on how to take the next step. So please listen to the whole call, and we'll be able to provide you with a lot of information. You might want to get out a pencil and paper to take some notes as I go through this call. So first of all, what is a Resolve peer-led support group? Well, it is a small group by its very nature, and just like the name says, it's hosted by a peer, meaning this is somebody who has either gone through infertility or perhaps is currently going through infertility, but the bottom line is this is someone just like you. This is not a mental health professional. In other words, our hosts are volunteers, and they help to moderate and facilitate the conversation, and they help with logistics and so forth. And we do provide our hosts with some very basic tools on how to moderate meetings and manage group dynamics, but our hosts are not mental health professionals. They're not trained in that discipline. So if you do happen to be a mental health professional, we'd love to talk to you about some other options that we have here at Resolve that might get you involved. But the peer-led support group model is not designed for mental health professionals, nor do we ask our hosts to serve in that role. So again, you're really there to help moderate and facilitate and provide some administrative and logistical support. But the support group model is, as many of you know, is a very tried and true model used in a number of different disease states and mental health type of environments, where you bring a small group of people together who are going through the same life experience. And just by the very nature of people interacting with others, they tend to not feel so isolated and alone, and they also connect with others who are going through the same thing. And as many of us who have gone through infertility know, the support group may actually be the only group of people that you've even told or are talking to about your infertility. And you may not necessarily have a support group or a support network through your friends and family. So the support group really becomes a key component of your family building journey. So again, it's a small group. We like the Resolve Peer Led Support Groups to stay around, you know, 8 to 10 to 12 people. They can get larger at times, but ideally that's, again, this is sort of group dynamics. That's a really great size for people to have an opportunity to share and get support without feeling really, you know, that they're overwhelmed with a lot of people. So deciding to host, is this the right volunteer opportunity for you at this time? And I'm going to ask a couple of questions that you really need to think about and make a determination whether at the, you know, sort of at the end of this call and after everything you've heard, if you feel like this is the right time for you to do this. First of all, going to time, do you have the time? Do you have the time in your schedule to devote to hosting a group? Do you, that's going to mean that each and every month you'll be able to participate and be at the groups. The Resolve Peer-Led Support Groups generally meet every month. We do have some exceptions, but for the most part, they meet every month. Sometimes, you know, the time of the length of time varies, but it's anywhere from an hour to an hour and a half to 2 hours. So first and foremost, do you have the time to make that kind of commitment? As a host, there might be some administrative things that you'll need to do. We can talk a little bit about that when we get a chance to talk with Stacy, but you will have to respond to people who are interested in coming to your group and also providing, you know, some information to Resolve. So you'll need to ask yourself, you know, is this the right time? And, well, we're not going to ask you to make a commitment set in stone. We would really love for our peer-led support group host to look at this as a year-long commitment. There's a lot that goes into it, and it really is best for the group if there's consistency in the host for at least, you know, a 12-month period. And we know that things come up and your plans change, but if you sort of go into it with that mindset, that would be preferable. Secondly, think about where you are in your family building journey. You may be somebody who's still building your family. Maybe you're in medical treatment, or maybe you haven't started that yet, or maybe you're thinking about adoption or some other way to build your family, maybe through donor egg or donor sperm, or maybe you're done with your family building and you really want to give back to others and to Resolve. So those are all ways that you may want to give back or want to help. And all of those are fine. We are not going to necessarily screen you out as a host based on where you are in your family building journey. We don't do that. The question is really, are you in a good place for you to take on this added responsibility and added stress? Because there certainly is a level of stress in taking on a new volunteer commitment, as well as the type of commitment that this is. While you are not a mental health professional, you may, you know, have a lot of the burdens of the group that you sort of take home with you. We hear that a lot from our hosts. And really, it's important for you to make a decision on whether this really is the right thing for you to do at this time. Another thing that we want to think about, or you want to think about if you are want to host a group, is really, what is your motivation? We hear sometimes from people who say, you know, I ended up going to this fantastic doctor and you know, they got me pregnant, and I just want everybody to know about this great experience I had. Others we hear from, and they say, you know, I adopted from overseas and I just had the most fantastic experience, and I just want everyone to hear about this and do the same thing I did. And we love to hear those stories, but those are really not good motivators for hosting a group, in part because we want our peer-led support group hosts to really be impartial, and you're not there to really preach or talk about how you built your family. I mean, your experiences and your feelings are certainly very important to share. But if your motivation is really to kind of steer people towards one family building option or towards one, even one professional, you really want to think about whether this is the right way to do that. And I think, we would have to say that that's probably not a good reason for hosting a group. So really think about it. A lot of people tell us, you know, they're hosting a group because they do want to give back. Sometimes you really need the support of the group, and there isn't anything else in your town or community, and you want to step forward and help start a group. We hear that a lot. So whatever those reasons are, you really just want to think about what your motivations are and if, in fact, this is the right thing for you. I will tell you that we are also looking for our hosts to really be self-starters. You know, you're gonna be asked to take a lot of initiative and work independently. I mean, Resolve is here to help you, to provide some guidance, but you know, we're here in Virginia and you might be in another part of the country, and you're gonna have to take some of this initiative to really help the group form and move along. So again, think about your own situation and if this is gonna be the right opportunity for you at this time. I want to share a little bit about some logistics, because we do get this a lot from people who are thinking about hosting a group. You know, where's the group meet, and how does it all work? And again, at the end of this call, I'm going to give you some very specific instructions on next steps. And one of the things that you will get from us as part of your process is a manual, and the manual will be very complete. But just to give you a little bit of a sense on logistics and so forth, first and foremost is the location and the day and time of your support group. One of the nice things about being the host is, if you're starting a brand new group, is you get to pick the day and time that the group is going to meet, as well as help determine the location. Many of you are going to be picking up the host duties from an already existing group, so you really don't even need to worry about this. But for those of you who are starting a brand new group, you will need to determine a consistent day and time each and every month when the group is going to meet. Again, most of our groups do meet monthly, but the key thing here is consistency. So, for example, if you're going to meet on a Wednesday, meet on the second Wednesday of every month. If you're going to meet on a Monday, meet on the third Monday of every month. Whatever it is, it's consistent and the same every single month. Also with the time. Now, here's the nice thing. Because you're starting a brand new group, pick a day and time that's convenient for you. When you look at locations, pick a location that's going to be convenient for you. You're the host. You're starting the group. You have the ability to do that. In terms of locations, what we really want to stress is that we want the groups meeting in a public space, at least as much as we can. A public space could be a conference room at a hospital. It could be a meeting room at a local public library. There might be community centers. We've even heard of people having these in, like, homeowners association conference rooms and that kind of thing. We also are noticing a trend in that more groups are meeting in coffee shops and that sort of space. And these can be, you know, nice options depending upon how the place is set up. We just want people to keep in mind that the meeting space should really provide an opportunity for people to have a sense of privacy. And we don't want people to feel like every time they go to a support group they've got to, you know, purchase a meal or you know, expend any more money. So just something to think about. You know, certainly the privacy of the participants is a really key factor. We do have some groups that meet in people's homes, and we'll just want to talk to you about that before you make that decision. Making sure that you know, your home is conducive, there's parking, and then if you are somebody who already has children, really thinking about that environment for people who might be coming to your home. We also get a lot of questions about people having meetings in places of worship or in churches and synagogues. And again, we just ask that you talk to the Resolve staff about that decision. We do find that in some locations that tends to work out great because of how the house of worship is set up. But we want to make sure that people understand that this is a Resolve support group. It's not supported or hosted by that particular faith, and we don't want there to be any confusion. Again, we want these support groups to be very open and very inviting, and also, you know, respect people's privacy. And so you want to think about that when you do this in terms of picking a location. One of the things I just want to say, it's sort of a do's and don'ts. I've already mentioned the consistency in the day and time. So a big don't is, you know, don't change the day and time each and every month. And a big don't on logistics has to do with not having the peer-led support group meet in the office of any type of professional who's in this this field. So that might be a doctor, a reproductive endocrinologist. It might even be an adoption agency or a mental health professional. Oftentimes, these professionals have beautiful facilities that are completely empty at night or on the weekends when you're probably going to be hosting your group. But we really do not want you, in fact, we do not allow you to host a Resolve group in any of these kinds of facilities. We just don't want to have any sort of impression of any bias or that we endorse that particular professional. And I'll be honest with you, we've heard from some of our hosts who've actually held a group at, for example, a doctor's office, and they come to find out that none of the other professionals in their town are letting their patients know about the support group because it's at their, you know, competitor's office. So we just can't allow our groups to meet in those spaces. Trust me, you will find lots of places to meet, but keep in mind that we're here as a resource for you. So if you feel like you're getting stuck and you can't, you know, really figure out a place to meet, call us and contact us, and we can brainstorm with you to come up with ideas. But don't let that hold you back from starting a group. I also just want to say that some people say, well, gosh, should I find the location and pick the day and time, or, you know, should I wait? And there's really no right or wrong answer here. I think talking to the Resolve staff, finding out a little bit about what may already be going on in your community, as well as, you know, what our experiences may be in that community. We may, you know, we may already know that there are people interested in a group. It may be wise for you to just put the word out that you are beginning to host a group in your hometown and let people contact you. And once you've got, you know, a few people who've contacted you, you can say, great, now we're going to start the group. I do know hosts who've gone ahead and found the location and started a group, and they went for the first month and no one showed up. And they went for the second month and nobody showed up. And then, boom, the third month, five people showed up. So it can work both ways. And again, good question and good situation to talk to the Resolve staff regarding where you live and what do you think might work best for you. And then Resolve, once you've got you've established that you're going to host a group, Resolve will send you some Resolve literature that you can share with your group. And it's a small packet of some very basic brochures that we have that are really informational. These are Resolve materials. And I will say that we do have a policy with our professionals that they are not to contact any of our hosts directly. You may get a professional contacting you who says, I would love to have my business card or my brochures put out, and we do not allow that. So the professionals should know that's our policy, but we definitely let our hosts know that that's a policy. So this is really for your protection, and if you do get any requests, you know, we'll just have you contact us and we can take care of it. But we will provide you with a few Resolve things that we think are helpful for people who are coming to your support group to have. So, again, that's just a little bit about logistics, location, day, time, and then a few little do's and don'ts. One more thing I just want to mention about the day and time. Granted, I'm here in the Washington, D.C. area, but you want to think about a day and time that is convenient given where you live, where the group is meeting, and, you know, any sort of traffic patterns. You know, most of our groups are meeting in the evenings or on the weekends. So you just want to think about a starting time that is going to be convenient for people who are coming to the group. So we also want to look at safety issues, you know, in terms of where you're having the group. When the group ends, is it going to be dark out? Is it a well-lit parking area? That sort of thing. So just think about that when you're looking at various locations. All right, we're going to talk a little bit about how to market your group and how we actually let people know that you have a group. There's a couple of ways that this is done. First of all, we will provide you with a template of a flyer. It's got the Resolve logo on it. It's got some information in general about support groups, but it allows you to put your contact information on it. And this is a great thing to have on hand for you to give to different professionals in your community and to let them know who you are and that you're starting a group. The professionals could be everything from OBGYNs to reproductive endocrinologists to adoption attorneys, mental health professionals, adoption agencies. So it's even some of the complementary medicine, whether it be an acupuncturist or nutritionalist, even chiropractors. There's a lot of professionals who would love to know that there's a support group going on. And again, we can provide you with a template, but you really don't need to feel like you've got to copy off hundreds and hundreds of these. Really just copy off one copy and you can give it to the professionals and ask them to make copies for their patients and clients. They'll be very happy to do so and you don't have to go into all of the expense of doing that. But I'll tell you, we get a lot of traffic on the Resolve website, and we have a calendar, and we've got a lot of ways for people to find out if there's local support in their area. And that is where you're going to get a lot of inquiries. We also do send out targeted emails. For example, you know, we've had new support groups forming in a particular state, and we'll send out a targeted email to just people in that state, letting them know about the new support groups, and we periodically include information about support groups in a lot of our emails. So there's a lot of information available. Again, people come to our website, they look up their city and state, and boom, they'll find out where you are and that sort of thing. This is why it's really important that we have a way to contact you. Because we're going to be posting that on our website and also through these various, you know, e-communications. In other words, if somebody in your city wants to come to a support group, they're going to contact you directly. If they contact us, we are actually going to send them to you. So you need to be prepared to receive inquiries from people. Again, this is via an email address or a phone number, so whatever you're comfortable with. And we can talk to you about setting up an email alias if you're not comfortable using your current email address, but we will need a way for people to contact you. And then we also have an entire online community, and we absolutely encourage people to post information about their support groups through Resolve's online community. It's a great way to get information out and let people know who you are and that you're starting a new group. And then, of course, it's one of those viral things. You know, they'll tell people that they might know in your area. And then if there's other bulletin boards or blogs or other ways that you think you can post information about your group, please do so. But we very much ask that you respect the rules of those various websites and bulletin boards. We don't want you inadvertently posting something that you're not supposed to. So again, other than the Resolve community, if you're going to go to any other website or anything to post information, please make sure that you have their permission to do so before you do that. But I will tell you, between letting some of the professionals know and then the Resolve website and then some of these Resolve e-blasts, you're probably going to get a lot of interest in your support group. So we do not keep names of people who are interested in a support group in various parts of the country. So if somebody contacts us and we don't have a group, we just tell them that, you know, here's ways that you could start a group. Keep checking back. We may, you know, start a group in your area soon, but we don't have any mechanism for tracking who those people are. So it's a good idea to, you know, get your information to us and up on the site as soon as we can, as soon as you've decided to start a group, so that interested folks can get in touch with you. So I've just covered a few high-level things on this call, but I'd like to now introduce you to one of our current peer-led support group hosts, and her name is Stacy, and she has been hosting one of Resolve's peer-led support groups for about a year and a half, so she's had a great amount of experience, and she's actually calling in today from her home in Alabama. And Stacy, I am so glad you have been able to join us today, and I would love for you to share a little bit of information about your experience hosting a group. So again, welcome, Stacy.
Hi, Barb.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm so glad you're able to join us, a real live host. So I've got a few little questions that I'd love to ask you that I'm sure are questions that anybody listening today would have for you. So I'm going to just go through a few questions. First of all, as I mentioned, you're hosting a group in Alabama, and you've been doing it for about a year and a half, but I didn't ask you what kind of group you're hosting. Is there a theme, or is there some name for the kind of group that you're hosting?
It's really a general infertility group. I thought that was the easiest way to get the group started.
And, you know, that is a great point. There are lots of different Resolve peer-led support groups. In other words, you could be like Stacy and start a general infertility group. And I'll be honest with you, if you're in a part of the country where there currently is not any kind of support groups, we highly encourage you to go with a general infertility support group. But here in the Washington, D.C. area, for example, we have, gosh, I don't know, about 10 different groups that meet every month. And we've got groups on considering adoption. We've got groups for people with secondary infertility. There are even groups for pregnancy after infertility. We've seen a rise in groups on third-party reproduction. This would be surrogacy, donor egg, donor sperm. So, again, there are lots of different ways that you can form your support group. Stacy, is your group women, primarily just women, or are partners invited as well?
It's open to everyone, but what I've found when significant others join or come to a meeting, they typically come for the one meeting and don't return. They feel like it's more valuable for the female going through the process. So it has turned into more primarily a female group.
Okay. And we do have groups that are led by a couple. And so if you're listening on the call today and you think that might be of interest, you know, definitely let us know that, because we have a lot of groups that are led by couples and that sort of thing. Stacy, I would love to know why you decided to start a Resolve support group.
I went out of the area on my infertility journey, and there was a Resolve support group there. There was not one in my community, so when I finished my journey, I decided to start one because of my personal experiences.
Wow, that is great. So when you started your group, there wasn't a current support group in your area?
Correct.
So what do you wish, looking back, what do you wish you had known at the beginning of this process of hosting a group?
I wish I had known some more efficient ways, I guess, to market our group and manage, I guess, the back office functions of the group.
When you say market the group, what do you mean by that?
I was doing everything on a month-to-month basis, and I attended one of the teleseminars on how to market your group, and the person on the group suggested doing the flyers annually, setting all of your dates in stone, and then getting the flyers out to the various places that you market the group on an annual basis. And I felt like I was doing it continuously instead of getting the word out there. And, of course, staying in touch and following up to make sure that they have enough flyers. But that was just one thing that I wish I'd known going in. It saved a lot of time in the long run.
Do you feel like you're spending a lot of time on this? How much time do you think you give to running the support group each month?
I would say about 5 hours, and that includes attending the meeting. So it's really not a whole lot of time.
And your group meets for an hour, hour and a half, two
hour
hours,
and
how
half.
Long?
An hour and a half.
An hour and a half. So what has been the hardest part for you in starting the group?
I think getting a consistent level of participation. I remember our first meeting, it was just me. So when the next meeting rolled around, and I think there were 3 individuals that joined us.
Okay.
That was very encouraging.
Do you
find... But now we're up to in between 8 to 10 participants a month, and that's been very encouraging.
Now, Stacey, these 8 to 10 people, do they change over time, or are they pretty much the same people every month?
Well, and that's been hard, too, because now we have a consistent level, I guess, of participation, but some people are still that core group from when I originally started the group, so that means their journeys have been unsuccessful. So besides those, I guess, 3 individuals, we have folks that rotate in and out based on their needs.
And I think for those of you listening that this is a common thing. I mean, you're going to find that you may have 3 or 4 people come, and then the next month it's one of those same people, but maybe it's 3 or 4 completely new people, and that is going to happen over time. There may be people who come one time and realize this is not for them, and then there may be people who come every single month. And so I think what Stacey's experience is very common in what we hear from our hosts all over the country. So Stacey, I get the sense that you have resolved your infertility and built your family. You're no longer in that journey. How does that affect the folks or new members that might come to the group? How do they react to knowing where you are in your family building journey?
I really don't think it's an issue. Of course, I explain why I started the group at every meeting, but I don't really advertise that I have been successful in my journey. I mean, I will say that, but I don't go into too many details unless people ask, because I just want to be sensitive to their needs and where they are emotionally.
That's great. That's great. Now, I'm going to ask you, what do you like the most about running your group, and what do you like the least? So you can answer either one you want first.
What do I like the best? I like being a resource to these individuals that are going through this most, I mean, for me personally, it was the most emotional time I've experienced thus far in my life. So I like having this safe environment and like I said, our group is primarily women, for these women to come in, share, cry, laugh with, seeing the successes and the strengths of the different individuals, that has been very encouraging. What I like least is I think it's seeing folks that have gone through this, I mean, for years, you know, 6 and 7 years, and they've been unsuccessful. I think that's the hardest part, the emotional aspect of it.
You know, one of the things you said about what you love about running the group, you know, people laugh, they cry, you know, they provide a lot of resources for each other. And I think when I think about a Resolve support group, I think of it in its purest sense of it being not only a resource, but a safe environment, as you have said, but it's meant to be a caring environment to move people on their journey. And I think one of the things that is a misnomer about support groups, and in particular resolve support groups, is that it's going to be depressing and it's going to bring you down. And what we so often hear from people is, wow, this group really helped me move along. Has that been your experience, Stacey?
Yes and no. The folks that are able to come back, I think they do get a sense. I find our group very encouraging and strong. However, the ones that don't come back, they have commented to me, and it's hard not to take it personal, that they felt worse when they left. And that's hard to hear that, but it doesn't meet everyone's needs, and I guess that's something else I wish I would have known going in when someone doesn't come back, that it's not personal, it's just not for everyone.
Absolutely.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. Okay. And it absolutely is true that this is not for everybody. In terms of marketing, you talked a little bit about doing that and how you've come up with some more efficient ways to get the word out. But how would you say most people find out about your group?
I think from our infertility clinics that are in Birmingham. We market, you know, the group there, also at some OBGYN offices. There's some specialty pharmaceuticals companies in Birmingham, and we market there. And then through past participants, keeping them informed as to our meetings so they can pass the word on to others. I think a lot of it is just, it's not necessarily the person picking up the flyer that's contacting me. It's maybe someone that has heard through someone else the referrals.
That's great. So a number of different sources, kind of covering all the bases there in terms of that. Now, let me ask you this, because this is a question we get all the time. How does your group deal with pregnancy amongst one of the members?
Typically, the member will contact me and let me know and ask how they should proceed. And I have allowed the person to come back to the meeting if they feel comfortable and share their success with the group. I have found that to be encouraging for the participants to see one of their own have some success.
Right.
We don't, and this is something else that I need to do, have any hard and fast rules, but I do think that that's necessary. And I know that that is something that Resolve advocates to have that.
Now, when you say hard and fast rules, what are you referring to?
Well, having the group tell me what it is they want. They may not want the person to come back. That may be too emotionally challenging for them to work through. Hearing it through me may be all they want to hear, although I have heard members that have become pregnant, you know, they had this sense of community and then they felt kicked out.
Yeah, this is definitely something that has evolved at Resolve, because we used to have a very hard and fast rule about this, and exactly what you said, we've heard from people who felt abandoned and they really felt like they needed continuous support from their group. And so I think, you know, we really leave it up to the host on how to handle, but it's something that we encourage you to discuss up front with the group members early on, and if it's something that has to be talked about, you know, on a regular basis, if new people come in, you know, how are we going to handle it? It sounds to me like what you've suggested is that if somebody does get pregnant, they contact you offline, and that you work it through on that level. And I think that that's a great approach. But I want to just say a few things on that. We do have a lot of information in our handbook on this and resources, so we're not leaving you completely alone. But our policy is very flexible, and it's meant to be such so that we can handle this in a caring way and that we don't inadvertently give the message to somebody that, you know, that they need to immediately leave. On the other hand, this is a support group for people going through infertility. So seeing a member come back month in and month out as they're you know, belly's getting bigger and bigger, may not at the end of the day be the best thing for all the members. So it's really balancing the needs of all of those people. Do you have any other comments on that in terms of the pregnancy part?
I don't think so.
Okay. If the host becomes pregnant, that is something where we definitely want to know that at Resolve and can work with the host on what the next best steps are. One of the things that I just want to caution is that it's probably not a good idea to say, well, I'll ask all the members and, you know, we'll take a vote or they can let me know, because the members are not necessarily going to be honest. They may really care for the host and really like that person. And maybe afraid to actually say, you know what, it's going to be painful for me to see, you know, you hosting the group every single month. So it's something that we can help you at Resolve with so that you're not put into that kind of position to make those determinations. Now, Stacey, when you have your groups, do you have an agenda or how do you, you know, how do you go ahead and plan for the meeting?
I have an agenda for every meeting.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of things are on your agenda?
The things that are required by Resolve for me to inform the group about, just, I mean, as simple as, not as simple as, but, you know, I'm not a mental health professional. The purpose of the group, the purpose of Resolve, our standard date and times that we meet, and if we're having a round table, the round table discussion falls in the agenda, as well as any Resolve events that are upcoming that the group needs to be aware of. If there's a speaker involved, we'll do either the roundtable first and then the speaker, and I'll do a brief introduction of the speaker and the topic, or I'll flip it, the speaker first, depending on their schedule, then the roundtable, because when we have a speaker, we do not have the speaker sit in for the roundtable. We still want to be consistent with the safe environment, confidential environment, so the group can share. But I have to have an agenda for me to stay organized and keep the meeting on track and focused.
Have you? That sounds great. Have you had times when the conversation just was going nowhere?
Not really. I have a very talkative group. It's more diverting than the conversation not going anywhere. If that makes sense.
Yep.
Keeping the conversation, I guess, on track and giving everyone a fair opportunity to share their concerns and their struggles over the past month.
Now, have you ever had any situations that you felt uncomfortable handling where you've had to reach out to Resolve?
There has been.
Okay.
And I've contacted my staff support person, Margaret.
Okay. Great. So you do have some resources available. And one of the things you mentioned was a teleseminar that you sat in on that gave you some ideas about marketing. And we do offer, we try and offer every quarter an educational teleseminar for our current hosts. So everybody who's a peer led support group host anywhere in the U.S. can dial in to a toll-free number. And again, we try and do this once a quarter. And we give some Resolve updates, but it's really meant to be educational in nature. So as Stacey has said, we've had topics on marketing your group. We've had topics on how to find your successor. We've had topics on even how to take care of yourself while you're going through it and, you know, and running a group. We've had topics on group dynamics and that sort of thing. So we have some great resources for our host continuously throughout the year. Stacey, is there anything else you'd like to share about your experience hosting a Resolve peer-led support group?
It's been rewarding for me to host the group. I know that's not the purpose of the group, and I didn't anticipate that going in. And it's been great for me to see how the process has fine-tuned over time.
That is great. Thank you so much for your volunteer service to Resolve. And so if you are listening to today's teleseminar on how to start a Resolve peer-led support group and you feel as if this is definitely the opportunity for you, then we're going to ask you to take a couple of steps. The first one is going to be sending an email to Resolve, and if you get a piece of paper and a pen, I can give you that information. You're going to want to send an email to host@resolve.org, and that is host@resolve.org. Again, that's host@resolve.org. And in that email, please let us know that you have listened to this teleseminar. Tell us where you live, your city and state, and that you are interested in getting an information packet from Resolve on hosting a peer led support group. What's going to happen next is we will send you that packet of additional information and resources via reply email. And then there's going to be instructions in there on the additional steps in the process. So again, if after today's teleseminar you're interested in taking the next step, go ahead and email us at host@resolve.org and request an information packet on hosting a peer-led support group. Let us know the city and state where you live. We will go ahead and send you some more information. We hope you found this helpful, and we very much appreciate your support of Resolve, and I especially want to thank Stacy from Alabama for her volunteer service to Resolve and for sharing her experience with us today. Thank you so much, Stacy, and thank you for listening to this call.